A character planted in the audience that you'd never expect to be on the payroll. And when she plays her big scene, she creates more heat than you could ever imagine. Now here's the secret. She's a stunt granny.
Everybody wants to know why I'm always screaming at the beginning of these audios, and it's because I'm excited, I am happy, and I am happy to bring to you this edition of Stunt Granny TNA Audio, and my name is not Yelling Idiot, it is Dusty Giebing, and the person next to me is not Quiet Person letting me hang myself with my own stupidity, it is Matt. How are you doing today, Matt?
Did my ears just deceive me? Did the immortal Steve Williams' wife just call Baby Giebing the future of TNA Audio, WTH, FML?
Ooh. I don't know anything about Steve Williams' wife, man. This is a family show. I'm not going to tell you what I was doing last night or who I was doing it with or anything like that. I'm just going to hear to talk about TNA Impact, so I don't know what the hell you're talking about. And this was a doozy of an episode, Matt.
It was a Star Wars edition.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about the February 9th edition of Impact Wrestling, taped in London, England at Wembley Arena. Is it an arena or a stadium? I swear to God, Gorilla Monsoon always called it Wembley Stadium. But now they're not calling it that. Did something change? Am I wrong?
I was trying to think, was Wembley like stadium? Was that an open air? Like when, or was that indoors when they did a Bulldog and
Brett? Oh, maybe it was outdoors.
Yeah, because I thought Lennox Lewis was, the flag was waving in the wind.
Yeah, and I swear to God, it got darker as the show went on. So, yeah, good call. Good call. Totally different animals. I've always preferred closed-door arenas. There's something about outdoor shows that kind of bother me. Maybe it's just because WrestleMania 9 was so terrible.
Yeah, I think that, like, the acoustics are always really bad. Like, how do you... Unless everybody is, like, it's full and they're cheering, like, together, like, at a football game for a big play, it's just hard to get, like, chants and stuff going for a wrestling show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, like your voice disappears into the wind or something. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Let's see here. I did not plan a random question. Do you have a random question for me? To start this episode?
Ooh, random question.
Ask a random question.
When and where was the first wrestling show you attended?
First wrestling show I attended was, trying to think of the year. I've been watching since 89, but I didn't wear my parents down enough to get to a show until 93, maybe? And that was at the Kohl Center in Oshkosh. And I remember I went with my friend Nick, and totally unbeknownst to us was that our friend Eric also had tickets. We met him there at the show. That was kind of fun. And the show was so sparsely populated that we kept moving up until we ended up in, like, the fourth row. That's how few people were in Oshkosh that day. And it was headlined by Yokozuna over Randy Savage. That was the main event. I remember that.
Okay, yeah, we had one probably around that same time when they were doing like kind of high schoolish shows, and I didn't get to go. It was in Monroe, but the first one, I don't remember if I the first thing I went to was a WCW house show or if it was a Raw, but they were both in Rockford right around the same time. And I remember the Raw, they did it was like somebody got put in a casket. It was like Stone Cold and Mankind and Undertaker, like three-way stuff going down. And the WCW show was like definitely during NWO time. I think Lex Luger and the Giant were in the main event. But, yeah, I didn't get to go until I was like right around like late middle school, high school years. So kind of around that time frame, a little later for me. But, yeah,
sure.
nothing too exciting. I went to WrestleMania 22, which you were at, not knowing at the time, but was there.
Yeah.
That's the biggest show I've been to. I went to Taboo Tuesday. I think it was the first one or the second one, whatever, it was in Milwaukee. So.
Okay. Gotcha. Oh, I know a random question I can ask you. You posted something earlier in a super secret forum that I'm not allowed to say the name of about ROH. Just real quick, could you extrapolate on your thoughts about ROH right now? You got some strong opinions.
I do. ROH, I tried to watch it. I DVR it every week, and I see nothing on the show worth watching besides the Briscoe brothers. I know ROH had its heyday, and I didn't see any of it. I wasn't even that excited to YouTube it or look it up in any other way. So I never saw it during the Punk Joe heyday. But what I see on TV now, since everybody can watch it basically, is they're just a bunch of guys. It's like you look at them and you're like, okay, that guy could be my plumber. That guy could work at the store down the street. They just look like guys. And when I watch wrestling, I always think you got drawn in because larger than life personalities. And when you have everybody on the roster look just like normal guys you'd see in everyday life, whether it's not just a size thing. I mean, because you can't really tell exactly how big these guys are, but everybody is just so bland on the show besides the Briscoes. And I can't even get into Kevin Steen, which people are like, well, what about Kevin Steen? And I say, I'll take 10 Trevor Murdochs over one Kevin Steen.
Oh, God, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I just don't care for ROH. I'm going to keep DVRing it, seeing if something catches my eye. But it's very cheesy, even the backstage stuff where people are, like, trying to do the evil look, like playing to the last row, even though they're playing to the camera 5 feet in front of them. So, yeah, just not impressed. But I said I'll just keep giving it a chance, and if it catches on with me, I'll be the first guy to say, hey, I really liked it this week. But the only thing I get into is the Briscoes, and they're feuding with Benjamin and Haas, and those guys haven't done anything for me since they're wearing red, white, and blue.
Sure. I don't disagree with you on a lot of what you said. I'll say this. The Joe Punk heyday, you got to see some of that. Those were excellent matches and excellent shows, and I attended some of them live. Joe Homicide, Joe Punk, those are great matches. You need to seek those out. As for the product right now, I love Jim Cornette. You know that. I think a lot of his booking is really good. I think the talent he has to work with, you're right, it's not up to snuff. Truth Martini is embarrassing. Truth Martini is like an imitation of an imitation of Don Callis, you know? How that is on the show, I don't understand. He's like the top manager there. I don't get it. I don't like it. I don't want it near me. That kind of stuff is just schlocky and low rent. The short thing, they are shorter than the average wrestler, and it's noticeable. And it, quite frankly, that hurts their product too. And basically, it's just guys in trunks going out there, walking to the ring and having a match. And that just, That's not my kind of wrestling. So in a lot of ways, I agree with you.
Yeah, and I'm hoping we'll break the news. The rumor is that Vince Russo's out and Dave Lagana's in, and I'm hoping, hey, maybe Vince Russo could end up in ROH, and you know everybody's going, oh, that's blasphemy, but maybe they would actually have some characters because I said right now they're just guys.
Listen, in theory, if they can keep their egos in check, Russo and Cornette together would be perfect for that company. They're both opposite ends of a candle that gets you towards something really good. Cornette can be the detail guy, the storyline guy. Russo can flesh out characters for everybody from the mid-card on up. If they can put their bullshit together and work together, I think they can take ROH to the next level. So I agree with you exactly. I can't believe I'm praising Russo.
Well, when you're looking at a product that bad, you're kind of hoping for anything to give it a little spark. So he might could do it. I said if they have somebody else who can work with him, because I guess the other people who are working with him now or were working with him now are just as bad as he is on pushing the wrong people or overriding. I guess
he was at his best when he was working directly with McMahon. He needs a strong personality to tell him, hey, these ideas fucking suck, you goddamn idiot, don't do that, but we'll do this over here, and Cornette's that kind of guy.
And yeah, if the person who he's working for isn't worried about losing money, which they're not in TNA, they're just like, oh, hey, write for me, right? I need two segments, half hour, write me in. Whereas, when he was working for Vince McMahon, the buck stops with him, because if it's a bad idea and he thinks it is, he doesn't want to lose money. Where TNA, if they're getting funded other ways, so who knows?
Oh, yeah. As for TNA, though, I'm very excited about him being replaced. They need to change the direction. So, anywho, shall we move on, then? Edition of Impact?
Yeah, this might have been Vince Russo's last show, so that we're reviewing.
Yeah, and you can tell it was, and we'll get to that in a minute here. There was his fingerprints left on this show. Like I said, we'll get into that in a minute. But the show proper starts out with, already I feel like I'm in an acid trip vortex, because they're comparing the Garrett Bischoff, Eric Bischoff, Hulk Hogan storyline to Star Wars. And right off the bat, I'm feeling like, wait a minute. Is Hulk Hogan going to take on Darth Vader at the pay-per-view? What's happening here?
He could. It'd be right up there with RoboCop ripping the door off. Yes, it's a Star Wars-themed episode, and all we got was this intro video with James Earl Jabroni, which actually worked with the Star Wars thing. And then we
time that was perfect. Yep.
Yeah. And then we got a 1 minute movie preview, and that was it. They did no pre-tapes I thought, hey, a lot of these guys aren't on here. Like we said last week, Eric Young, ODB, comedy gold with this stuff, and they didn't even pre-tape anything and splice it into the show. It was just the opening video and a minute movie preview.
It was 2.5 minutes. I timed it. But again, I feel like I'm shaking the devil's hand by saying this, but they really did miss an opportunity to have Eric Young do something goofy. Like, this would have been the golden opportunity for Eric Young to do something goofy and for it to be actually halfway funny. Have him come out dressed like Darth Vader or something. I don't know. I don't know much about Star Wars. I know Darth Vader. I know Han Solo. I'm more of a Star Trek guy. if I had to pick sides, but yeah, just something goofy Star Wars related would have been a fun way to tie it all in, and they missed the opportunity. Of course, though, it was because Eric Young couldn't fit onto the three-person jet they had, so.
Yeah, Air Dixie was folded yep. right up with probably a lot of bear on board, so.
Yes. Well, then we get Mike, Today, and Taz introducing us to the show and Bully Ray coming out. He immediately demands his music to be turned off. He's pacing all over the ring. He said he wanted to talk to his dear, close, personal, longtime friend, Bobby Roode, which is pretty funny. Bully Ray continues to hit all the right notes for me. I think he's like the only guy in TNA that fully understands, A, how to get over, and B, what his character is all about. Like, he is really fleshed out where his character is and when to be, you know, when to be funny, when to be sarcastic, when to be angry. He just hits all the right notes for me, and I think he's really the MVP of Impact lately.
Yeah,
but anyway, go ahead.
Him or Sting would be the best things on the show. Hogan was last week. He didn't do a whole lot this week, but yeah, those guys going at it. It's just sad that if he would have got his fat body in shape 10 years ago when they did the brand split, when they split up him and Devon, maybe he'd actually got a halfway decent run than his 2-week program with Triple H.
I feel like they kind of punished him for Devon not getting over. You know, more than any of his failures in that character. I feel like he just, like, Devon didn't get over as a singles guy, and they didn't know what else to do with him, so they had to put him back together. It's kind of the problem with any brother team. It's really hard to get out from under that. The Hardys have had varying degrees of success getting out from underneath each other. But, like, bad example, but like the Beverly Brothers. You weren't going to see them break up and all of a sudden Bo become a huge single star. So, brother team kind of books yourself into a corner.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, the only people are Christian and Edge that I can really think of. And actually,
yep.
when they kind of broke off, and after a while they were friends, they weren't brothers anymore, so they tried to split that.
Yeah, back away from that aspect, yep. Bully demands Roode come out to the ring, and then immediately demands for Roode's music to be cut off, and then he meets Roode in the entrance way, not even letting him get to the ring, says we can talk right here. And he starts running down Roode, saying, well, I've had your back since day one, but you didn't have mine, so what the fuck here? And Roode, doing cowardly heel, everything is about to fall apart, but I got to kind of glue it together, which is good. That's probably the best thing he's ever done as a heel, Trying to get Bully Ray to calm down. Let's go into the ring and let's talk this over. I love how wrestlers act like the ring is like a conference table at an office building. Like, we can't have wrestling matches in here, but we can talk for 20 minutes.
We got to settle this in a more private area where we can all, cooler heads can prevail, let's go in the ring.
Yeah, they're bickering back and forth, and the crowd is chanting, what? Which to me is like nails on the chalkboard. I wish that would go away forever.
Okay,
hearing the
question.
What chants makes me want to swing from your barn door. Go ahead.
Question for you. I heard another prominent editor-in-chief comment how he was mad at the crowd about them chanting for Devon last week. Isn't that, like, that's not the crowd's fault? This crowd showed up, and basically because TNA has so many has-beens on their roster that they wanted to see the stars of the past. But he was, like, mad. We had a guy who was mad at the crowd because they ruined it. They ruined a segment by in a match by chanting for Devon last week. that's not the crowd's fault. They could chant whatever they want. I mean, I could see if there's the Impact Zone who gets in free every week, but these people paid their money. Okay, it's not their fault that, you know, you didn't bring D-Von. He's on the roster.
Right.
And they couldn't do anything to shut him up. But, yeah, that just irritated me when I heard that analysis.
And you know what? Even cutting below surface level, it worked because it got under Bully Ray's skin. So I've got no problem with it whatsoever. That's just overanalysis from a stupid person. Oh, I hate when I say stuff out loud. So they're bickering, and Sting comes out, of course. The insane icon, Sting, I should point out. And he cuts off Bully Ray, who is trying to talk, and says he's going to be the special enforcer at the four-way dance at the pay-per-view. And then books a tag team match. It's going to be partners who can't get along. A Vince Russo favorite, isn't it? Bully Ray and Bobby Roode against James Storm and, I wonder who. God, who could it be? Oh, it's me! And then ta-ta for now, and he's out of there. And then we see Hogan and Garrett Bischoff backstage before we go to commercial break. Your thoughts on all this mess?
Not surprising at all. I guess it accomplished two things. It sets up the main event. It gave himself the special enforcer, which kind of made sense with everything that's been going down with the disqualifications and the belt shots and kind of screwy finishes they've had. So it makes sense that he didn't say I'm the referee, I'm the enforcer, which I kind of like better, which means, hey, I'm going to stand stay out of the way till stuff goes down. So kind of like that better than a referee where you know they're going to, you know, favor one side or the other. So.
Oh, yeah, that's one of my least favorite things in wrestling, dude. When you get referee who's obviously going to cheat for one side or interfere in some way, that's just nonsense. So we come back from break, and the announced team hypes up the main event, and then we get a video package recapping the entire situation between AJ Styles, Sam Winchester from Supernatural, and the Brown Blazer. And then we go to a match. And boy, did I hate this. Let me get this straight as I take several deep breaths as I try not to scream, because I already screamed once. The storyline here is that Daniels wants Sam Winchester to wrestle AJ Styles so he doesn't have to. And he insisted that they wrestle at the pay-per-view. Again, so he doesn't have to wrestle Styles. So the logical way to do this is Styles gets through Kazarian to get to the Brown Blazer. Instead of that, on free TV, we cut right to the punch with Daniels versus Styles. I don't understand.
This is right up there with last week where they did the Tara Gail Kim match, even though we're supposed to pay for it, even though nobody does pay for it. But Kaz, you're going to wrestle him, not me. And then they didn't even say, like, Sting made him or something like that. It was just kind of, well, here you go. Since he's wrestling Kaz at the pay-per-view, we'll have him wrestle the Brown Blazer instead. So, pretty ridiculous. AJ Styles, good wrestler. Daniels.
Yep.
Does nothing for me. He's a guy. He should be out there. They announce Christopher Daniels, and he points to the crowd and takes off his ring jacket. Get ready to lose.
Quite frankly, he'd be perfect for ROH right now because he's just guy who wrestles. That kind of thing does nothing for me. His character's not interesting. He never improved. In the 10-plus years that he's been wrestling on national TV, he never got any better. And, nothing about him really excites me. In fact, quite the opposite. He's probably one of my least favorite wrestlers. But I thought of, while I was watching this, there would have been a great way to book this match. You have Daniels do a super long Larry Zbyszko stall, and then when AJ finally gets his hands on him, maybe he hits one or two moves on him, Daniels immediately takes a powder and gets intentionally counted out. That would have been a good way to book it and set up for a future match down the road between the two. Instead, they just got a regular 7-minute match. That kind of sucked because Styles is an America worker. And it ended in a schmoz with Kazarian slipping the brown blazer brass knucks for the victory. Any other thoughts on this?
Nope. And they were those good old-fashioned brass knucks that were made out of tape. So.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, what you got there, tape on them or something? Those are like brass knucks with tape on them, Mike? Something like that. Just said they completely out to lunch Taz. Oh, by the way, during this match, Mike Tenay actually said, almost word for word, at the conclusion of this match, we will hear from Eric Bischoff for the first time since last week. Yep.
Well, in case you hadn't heard from him during the week, you know, if you didn't call him on the phone.
Right, right. He didn't, like, buy time on Spike TV during the middle of one of their shows to cut a promo. He waited. He waited until next week's impact.
But I do remember sitting through that whole god-awful movie on TNT that time to see the Hogan-Sting signing for Starrcade way back when in 1997. Yeah, they
got me. They sucked you in to the shitty movie?
They sucked me in at 14 or 15 years old. They got me,
yep.
And that was the first pay-per-view I ever bought.
Awesome. That's hilarious. So we hear from the aforementioned Eric Bischoff talking to Gunner, pocket-sized Gunner, about Hogan and Garrett. He tells Gunner that he wants him there with him, which, duh, he's going to be there with him anyway because that's the storyline, so this was a complete waste of time. And he wants for Gunner to take out Hogan and Garrett one kneecap at a time. Ah, ha, 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 ha.
Yes, Nancy Kerrigan style, or Brutus Beefcake style, going back to our WCW, I think, from last week with Arn Anderson being revealed as Brutus Beefcake.
Yes, yes. I'm the shapeshifter, like that character on Star Trek. And we go to something that I actually enjoyed, which was Magnus and Joe coming to the ring. Crowd pops huge for them because A, hometown boy, and B, they're the actual baby faces in this feud, no matter what TNA wants to tell me. So anyway, he talks about how England is his home, and it's good to be home, and, you know, talks about how he and Joe came to be a team, and they were put together randomly, but ended up liking each other, and they're focused, and they're going to stay together, and they're concentrating on winning the tag team titles. There were references to the boys in the back. There was reference to politics behind the curtain. This was very Vince Russo. I think he was like, you know, like a painter has one more masterpiece in him. He's trying to get in all his favorite shots before he leaves. So,
yeah,
yep.
And if people saw this, I hope they know that when I talk for a long time and you don't hear anything from Dusty, he is just standing next to me doing shoulder rolls and wagging his head from side to side, looking intimidating as I talk.
I am.
Pulling a Samoa Joe.
I got the white towel around my neck and everything. So.
Yeah, that picture that when I'm going on, you're like, what's Dusty doing in the studio? No, he's
right.
He's just looking intimidating for me.
Right, and then when the camera's off of me, I'm busy eating a Volkswagen or something. That's a fat joke. Because only fat people can make fat jokes. Because when a fat person calls you fat, you know that you're fat, Joe. Anyway,
right. but you sound so thin.
The telephone cuts down 50 pounds. You know that?
I don't hear much deep breathing when you go on a rant. So we're good.
You know, Jordan and Jeremy actually sound fatter than I do because they have a lot of heavy breathing. So I feel good about that, actually. That's one of my, you know, solaces in life, I guess. Anyway, they call out Matt Morgan and Crimson, and they immediately go on the attack, send Joe to the floor, work on Magnus, and Joe makes the save. And then Joe responds by flipping them off, and there's a long bleep. Now, I have to say, two of my favorite things in the world on TV are flashing police lights and long bleeps. So I got to thank Joe for giving me one of those things. A long bleeped out swear word I will always pop for.
Yeah, they should just insert those every once in a while or get Kid Cash on the show more.
Yes, yes. The world needs more Kid Cash or Kid Beep Cash, as I like to call him. One thing that struck me here, Magnus can really talk. He held my attention. It was captivating. It was interesting. He wasn't rambling. It was very well done. Magnus is coming into his own, I think, as a potential star.
Yep, if the boys in the back and the politics don't hold him back, he can go someplace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then we go to Alex Shelley versus Doug Williams versus Austin Aries. This also bothered me. I think every match on this show bothered me, but this bothered me too, because you're basically having the pay-per-view match with one other guy thrown in.
Make this
a fucking tag match.
Well, they should have just done Aries and Doug Williams. Last week they had him beat up the one hometown guy, and actually Doug Williams would get cheered because he always gets cheered when they go to England, just like Magnus. They actually know and like him, so why not?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first, I guess they shouldn't even phone Shelley over then, but, you know, because they wouldn't have him sit on commentary with no commentators in the building, so they could have taken that seat off of Air Dixie and, I don't know, maybe given it to somebody else, maybe Madison Rayne to enhance Gail Kim's act, but...
Agreed.
Yeah,
agreed.
It should have been Aries Williams 100% and no Alex Shelley. It made no sense for the match. They should have taped the promo and did a video package or something.
Totally agree. Aries could have gotten a win. Shelley could have gotten a promo. We wouldn't have had to give away... Basically, they did. They gave away a pay-per-view match. There's another guy thrown into it, but it was basically inconsequential. And I hated it. Hated it! So
yeah, Aries went Yambag City on Doug Williams, Corey Gattaz, and then Shelley sneaks in a sliced bread number two. Yep. They need to call
number
it number two.
Two.
They never do, though, and gets the surprise pin on Aries. So, yeah, Shelley gets the win, so you know what happened at the pay-per-view.
Right. Check. And then Hulk Hogan. We see him backstage, and he's talking to Garrett Bischoff. And Sting walks in, and he and Hogan hug. And Hogan says he appreciates Sting helping him be himself again. And then Hogan says a bunch of stuff, and I literally had no idea what he was talking about. Like, I try not to zone out during this because I know I'll have to talk about it later, but I literally had no idea what Hogan was saying. He was saying, like, once this all goes down and you don't know... But, like, I know, and I don't know. I have no idea what he was talking about.
Well, the only thing I took out of it is a year or so ago, he basically just substituted the word for Sting in place of this ring because this business and Sting are the only things that have ever stuck by Hulk Hogan. So, yeah, because his wife left him, his kids left him, and now he has this business in Sting. So I don't know what happened to the Hall of Fame ring. Well, didn't Abyss feed it to him that one time, so maybe he hasn't found it yet.
I think that happened, yeah.
They did a weird hugging. There was a lot of hugging this episode for some reason. Sting with a monster hug on Hogan, and Hogan's kind of like, I don't know how I feel about that, brother. But, he kicks Jason Hervey out so they can talk a little more and probably hug
some
more.
Even though you can hear him right outside.
Right, and then my favorite part of the show.
Oh, God.
TNA decides to do some fan interviews from people in the arena. And, of course, they find the best fans in the world to endorse their product. We had a very large black woman with cheetah print, like a dog collar, and a good old blonde wig. Actually, looks just like
cheetah print. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, looks just like when we went on our honeymoon cruise. There was this 300-pound black woman with a blonde wig on that, and I think she was in London. But yeah,
okay.
way to endorse your product with that. That's the best you can find.
I've always hated fan interviews because they're always so awkward, but this one was magical. This one gets a special asterisk for just being the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, and I think didn't they do the same thing when they went to Monday Nights? They interviewed like some like half brain dead redneck guy talking about how they were gonna, whoop up on Vince McMahon or something. So this is not the first time they have had some bad judgment on crowd endorsement.
There's no quality control filter in TNA. It just sort of they do stuff, Things just happen. But I have a theory that woman did not buy a cheetah print outfit. What happened was she was wearing normal clothes, and then Hogan came out and made no sense, and he was sprinkling magic retard fairy dust all over. And the next thing you know, that woman is wearing head-to-toe cheetah print with a dog collar. She has no idea how it got there, has no idea what's happening. It's just the magic of Hogan. So I blame Hogan.
I just thought that cheetah tried to eat her, and it didn't quite work out.
Hmm. Indeed. Well, speaking of stuff that sucked, we go to a segment with Tara filming stuff at Wembley Stadium, and then Gail Kim attacks her and says the incredibly lame, "How's that for home video footage?" She said it three times, though. Once at the beginning, I think once in the middle somewhere, and definitely once at the end. Like, did you hear me when I said that funny thing I said? I'm going to repeat it. I'm going to repeat the funny thing I said. And, yeah, that sucked. That was a bad segment.
Yeah, and then they come back with a prolonged segment. So they've been doing this now where they give you half of it. And then they come back, and you got a hot biker chick, Gail Kim, beating up older kind of biker chick, Tara. So beats her down.
Yeah, they'll show you like 60 to 75% of what they're going to do, and then come back and show you everything. I don't know why they think that's a good format, but they do.
Yeah, so not good. I guess they flew them over for last week's match, so they had to do something with them on this week's show.
Yep.
And then we get a recap of the Hogan blathering promo that I did word for word last week. They cut out a couple sentences, but they kept up the reaching through the fog, climbing over the mountain, and being the hood ornament on my ship. So I'm glad we got to hear that again. And then we got Garrett and Hogan, and this is where my not funny quote at the beginning of the show was actually Mickie James live tweeting on the show saying she can't believe that Hulk Hogan called Baby Bischoff the future of the business.
Right.
So I don't know if she's trying to get fired or what, but not a good career move.
Yeah, she can go back to WWE where they treat the women with more respect, right?
Right.
Oh, maybe not.
Yeah, so Hogan said, "Everything you've given to me, I want you to give to him." So He wants the crowd, however hard they cheer Hogan, you got to cheer Garrett that hard now. That's what I got out of it.
Reeks of desperation. Reeks of just, please cheer this guy. Please. We're trying to push him. Just go along with it, fans. Please. Can you do that for me, please? Can you cheer him? I'm not asking for much. Just please. And then Eric Bischoff comes out with pocket-sized Gunner, the midget killer. Eric says, I'm going to ask a very, very sophisticated question. Who the hell do you think you are? Why are you sticking your nose in my business? And then Hogan says something about how, you know, Garrett's the future wrestling or something. Again, I felt like I was on acid during this whole thing. Nothing Hogan does makes any sense to me. Things just sort of happen. I think unicorn pranced through the screen at one point.
Why did Sting give Hogan the rights to book a match? Why didn't Sting just book the match?
I don't know. Maybe he had to go to the John at the time, so he's just like, yeah, Hogan, do whatever. Okay. I'm busy. I don't know. Nothing with Hogan makes any goddamn sense to me. As soon as the minute he goes away again, won't come a second too soon. Let's just say that. Bischoff low blows Hogan, and Hogan takes the world's slowest bump in the history of mankind. Gunner beats up Garrett some more. Hogan hulks up, knocks Bischoff out, and then tosses Gunner from the ring. That also took 3 centuries. It seemed like he wasn't sure which side of the ring to throw Gunner out of. It looked very awkward.
I think he was looking for the biggest cheers on where they want him, you know.
Oh, okay. Which side
but
wants
yeah,
to see
yeah,
the 24
poor,
inch
poor Gunner? Poor Gunner has to sell a hair pull like he's in a coma because he can't fight back. So, yeah, Hogan makes sure he kind of prances him around the ring, you know, for 5-10 seconds instead of discarding him and not making him look awful.
Right. Oh, this whole thing is making Gunner look awful. I think they can kiss goodbye any chance they ever had of making money with Gunner after this. Because, you know, Hogan's beating him up every week, and you know Garrett Bischoff is going to beat him. This is not going to go well for him. You know, it's just not. So, next thing was the trailer for the 3D movie. Again, I'm not a Star Wars guy, so I don't care. I have nothing to do with wrestling besides. And then we go backstage. Bully Ray and Bobby Roode are arguing. Roode says, "Let's hug it out." Ray leaves by saying 3 days, ominously, referring to the number of days left until he takes the title from Roode. Again, really good foreshadowing. Bully Ray is handling this whole thing really well, making the match seem like a bigger deal. Almost making me want to buy a TNA pay-per-view, but not really. And then we get segment number 3 with Hogan and Garrett talking.
Hogan's in the corner at the pay-per-view is all I got out of it. So tell us something we didn't already expect, I guess. Bischoff in one corner, Hogan in the other. My only question was, is Flair going to come in and bump around a little bit? But that didn't happen at the pay-per-view.
Nope.
So then we got, they flew over Mickie James and Velvet Sky. So Mickie James, obviously not grateful. Probably having to sit next to the bathroom on Air Dixie. And Velvet Sky was probably sitting in front of half the male wrestlers on the flight at one point or the other. So I just wrote down, it was slow-mo wrestling. Velvet gets the pin with a roll-up.
Yep.
She's awful. Mickie James, just like AJ Styles, not a miracle worker.
Right. God bless her. Velvet Sky looks pretty decent, but she is a horrible wrestler. And that was 6 minutes of my life I don't get back. And the one thing of note is the fans were solidly behind Velvet, and Mickey could kind of seem put off by that a little bit. So that was the only thing of note there. And then, let's see, we get a video hyping up the four-way dance at Against All Odds. Storm and Hardy and Bully Ray and Bobby Roode. Really well set up, actually, all things considered. There were some bumps in the road, and we were left wondering for several weeks where exactly they're going with it. But all things considered, I think they hyped up that pay-per-view main event pretty well. They should have announced it weeks before now. But I'm taking nits because no one's going to buy the pay-per-view anyway. And then we see Sting and Storm getting hyped for their match. Sting is good. Storm is sorry about your damn luck.
And cowboy up.
Got a cowboy up. He said that three times.
Yeah, and you missed. They did another fan cam before that with two trannies loving TNA. So that was nice.
Yep. Mhm.
Covering their demographics.
Some of the whitest trash people you'll ever want to see. Good to see the UK has some too. There's plenty here in Wisconsin. Just go to any Walmart and you'll see your fair share of white trash. And then we go to JB doing the introductions for the main event, which ended up being Storm and Sting beating Bully Ray and Bobby Roode in about 15, 16, 17 minutes, something like that. Your thoughts on this match?
Sting wrestled in, he had some purple camo gear with his black. In shape enough that he went no t-shirt, so good for him at 50 years old or whatever he is. I mean, he kind of looks like in the same shape he was for that match in 1997 that I plunked down $30 for.
Sure.
$450?
He looks great. $450?
Yeah,
he looks great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hope when I'm 50 I'm in that kind of shape. But, faces clear the ring. They go to the break. They come back. They discussed Immortal a lot, which I didn't know Immortal still existed, but talked about Abyss again, so at least they keep name-dropping Abyss. So he is coming back,
I guess. Back.
So they do the beatdown on Storm, wear him down. Sting runs wild, gorilla chest pound, double Stinger splash, and then my DVR cut out. And I had my DVR set for 5 minutes after the hour, so it should tape it all. TNA is a tape show, which means that they should end on time and format the show in that way. SmackDown always does. So I didn't see what happened after the double Stinger splash. I just know that Sting got the world champ to tap out. So that means Sting is not winning on Sunday. Oh, Sting wasn't in the match.
Oh. It's almost like they should have had Storm pin Roode, but what do I know? Because I don't know anything, apparently. To go back to your other point, they could have... Hey, TNA, you could have cut out the fan interviews part. It's okay. I swear to you, I promise you, we would not have missed that. If you had cut that out and then had more time to finish the match on time, that would have been okay. I swear to you. I'm not lying to you, TNA. It would have been just fine. Bully Ray takes out Storm, grabs the belt, acts like he's going to help Roode up, but then he squats down and says, see you in 3 days, champ, drops the belt down him and leaves. And then it ends with Roode tapping out to end the show. Interesting. You know? There's some intrigue going into the pay-per-view.
God bless him. I wish I could have seen it.
God bless him. They do better planning than WWE seems to do for the most part. Like week to week, this is where we're going planning. Simple things that I shouldn't have to waste my time praising them, but based on how bad the last 5-6 years have been, these are huge steps for TNA. So,
yeah. I think they actually have a better chance to do it because they tape a couple in a row. So the writing
yep.
has to be done. You know, it basically has to be done for that show and the next day almost, especially not so much this London one where they didn't have everybody go on. But when they bring everybody
yeah.
to the Impact Zone, it's like, okay, we have all these guys here. Okay, if we're not going to use so-and-so on day one, we need to use them on day two because we're paying them to be here anyway. So they kind of make sure they do it that way. Sometimes they throw on too
yeah.
much garbage to make sure everybody gets on, but writing a couple shows in a row helps. The only thing is they have a hard time switching it up. If something does bomb or they want to tweak something, they're kind of stuck. And for whatever
oh, yeah.
reason, sometimes they also tape things out of order, which makes no sense to me, but they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, forced coherence. It fits well on TNA. WWE seems to be just, let's throw these noodles up against the wall, and we'll see what sticks, and we can always throw different noodles up against the wall next week. So... yeah, any other thoughts on the show?
We were going to record this before the pay-per-view happened, but
yep.
So I had written down all the matches for the pay-per-view that like I remembered off the top of my head, I didn't look. And then since we're recording this just after the pay-per-view got over, there was one match I had missing, and it was AJ Styles and Kazarian, so it shows how much their feud meant, because they somehow I remembered that Jesse Sorensen and your boy Zema Ion were having a match, but I couldn't remember AJ and Kaz. So,
guys that
haven't
been used regularly in weeks is more memorable than the feud they've been building up every week. Yep, makes sense.
Yeah, so so should we just move into the pay-per-view then?
Yeah, sure. I haven't had a chance to see it all yet, wink, wink, but I've got the results here in front of me, so I can paint with a broad brush and you can give me comments as you see fit. The opening match was Zema Ion against Jesse Sorensen, and Zema Ion won by count-out in about 5 minutes. Any thoughts on this?
I missed this one. Apparently, Zema Ion knees Jesse Sorensen on the head. Yeah, I thought Junkyard Dog died. But anyway, Zema Ion hits Jesse Sorensen with a knee on a dive to the outside, hits him in the head, knocks him out cold. So, I don't know. Apparently, Ref Hardy wasn't doing that match because they actually stopped it instead of letting Zema Ion roll him in the ring and beat him up some more. So, they just did a quick count out. And haven't heard anything yet. Apparently he had to go to the hospital, but probably should be all right. Probably just got knocked a little loopy.
This ain't ballet, folks. Okay. Backstage interview, Christy Hemming, looking amazing, interviewing Bobby Roode, looking less amazing, of course. Said he walks in as the TNA champion, and he's going to leave the TNA champion because he always gets the job done. Questions how many tries Hardy needs, how many tries can he get, how many times does he have to beat him. Said he beat Storm for the belt, and he's failed to take it back too, and he has no idea what Bully Ray's problem is. So there's that. And then we go to my double main man, Robbie E, coming out with Rob Terry, and he kicked some ass on Shannon Moore. This is excellent. Like, one of my favorite wrestlers right now. Beating one of my least favorite wrestlers of all time. I always approve of this. So he retains the television title in about 10 minutes. I'm going to chalk that up to excellent. I don't need to see it. I know it was excellent because it had the right finish.
Yeah, the only problem was it lasted 9 minutes instead of two, but what are we going to do? Apparently they needed to fill some time, and because the main eventers with four guys who've been in the business forever apparently can't string together a very long match.
Right. Yep. In a video package to set up the Knockouts title match, which results in Gail Kim beating Tara to retain the belt in about 6 or 7. Now, what is the name of Gail Kim's finisher? I can't remember.
It's the Snitsky Special, a.k.a.
Beautiful.
Eat Defeat.
I promised you I wouldn't steal it, and I didn't. So there you go.
Yeah, yes. From now on, everybody, it's the Snitsky Special. I will not refer to it as Eat Defeat, because,
right,
as you all know, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my fault.
Then Christy Hemme interviews James Storm about the four-way dance. Said he'd be having a party in Orlando. I'm sure it'll be at the local bar, and some of his rowdy friends will be invited. Anyway, I'm just going to let that sit. Then we go to the tag team title match, where Joe and Magnus beat Morgan and Crimson to win the tag team titles in about 10 minutes. Thank God. They actually booked that right.
The baby faces beat the non baby faces. Apparently Crimson and Matt Morgan should have spent more time planning and not getting quotes on their insurance, and maybe they could have held on to the titles a little longer. So I'm sure they will feud against each other now.
I'm sure they will, and I hope that ends with Morgan just killing Crimson dead. And then we never see Crimson again, and then Morgan can move on to better things.
Right. This,
I hope.
This is the first championship for Joey Maggs in his illustrious 20-year-plus career.
Nice. Yes, it is, because normally he's doing jobs to Axel Rotten on NWA TV. Yeah, I'm tripping him. On accident, right, Joey? Mm-hmm. Okay. So then we go backstage to Christy Hemme interviewing Bully Ray. Let me just say something about the formatting. I love this. Match, interview, I love it. Perfect. It's little things that make me happy, Bruce, and I appreciate it. He chases Hemme away, which is stupid, because I'd want her in my presence at all times. I would chain her to me if I could, and have her forcefully follow me at all times, just so I could look at her all day. Anyway, he delivers his promo, says he's got Storm's number, he's got Hardy's number, and now he's in the head of Bobby Roode, like no one else has ever been. Said everyone thinks he's the dark horse, but he's a thoroughbred, and he considers himself the favorite to win the title. So then we go to the X Division Championship match. Good match, lasted about 15 minutes, ends with the greatest man in the world beating Alex Shelley to retain the belt. Your thoughts on this?
This is when I finally got to my neighbor's house to watch the show. So I thought this was a really good match. Probably had to be the best match of the night. I doubt anything before it. I just wish that it would have ended about a minute or two earlier. They did a spot where Aries actually did a brain buster on Shelley, like on the ring apron, which looked like it killed him. It looked kind of more like a Death Valley driver than the brain buster. But then he rolls him, does a couple moves, rolls him in, gives him the brain buster. That should have been it. They kind of did an overly kick out. Some more hope spots for a minute, and then he gives him a second brain buster and puts the neck vice on it, which he's calling the last chancery, I guess is what they called it. He almost killed the guy 2 weeks ago with it. Getting over his finishers on the English guy 2 weeks ago helped, even though he almost killed him.
Yeah, but still, it got it over, which is beautiful. It's something they don't really do in wrestling anymore. Aries gets it like not a lot of wrestlers do. He gets the little things. All the stuff I praised Bully Ray for, I think it goes double for him, too. He's a guy that gets it and knows how to get himself over, knows what his character's all about. So thumbs up to him all the way around. And like we talked about last week, everything Alex Shelley does that isn't wrestling, seems like he just doesn't care, you know? Like, his look is bad, the look on his face is bad, like he'd rather be anywhere else. I mean, he gets in there and wrestles and he's fine, but everything else he needs work on. so just feels empty. Okay, then we go backstage, Hemi interviewing Jeff Hardy. Had some wicked face paint on, of course. Said his back and neck have seen better days, but he's going to win the title anyway.
And then yeah, we go
to the video.
Mm-hmm. He looked like the opposite of $1 million right there.
Yes. King Midas in reverse. Anyway, video sets up the Brown Blazers protege against AJ Styles, and this ends with Kazarian winning in about 20 minutes. Yeah, you can tell this is one thing I like about TNA, and even when I really hated TNA, their pay-per-views were still pretty good because they had good wrestlers. I mean, the best thing for them to do here, Kazarian is much better than Daniels, and Styles is really good. Just give them 20 minutes and let them wrestle, you know?
Yeah,
Nothing wrong with that.
I didn't think this was very good, and I think it was just because it was two baby faces. The crowd didn't know who to get behind, and usually that crowd like will jump all over everything. But if Kaz was the actual heel in this, it might have done something for me. But it just seemed like you knew there was going to be absolutely no consequence until Daniels got involved, which he actually doesn't get involved until AJ, instead of jumping on Kaz, goes to the top rope, jumps on Daniels, and then crawls, gets back in the ring, and gets beat. So, one of my neighbors said he's a the dumb redneck just got pinned for being a dumb redneck instead of actually letting Daniels cost him the match. So, yeah,
right.
Chalk one up to Florida International or Gainesville University.
Nice. Yeah, Kazarian is way too sympathetic in this role. It's another one of those cases where they need to shit or get off the pot. Go full-blown with Kazarian as a heel, you know? You're right. You're absolutely right. Now that I think about it, it would have made the match work much better if one of them had been a heel. So, instead, we were kind of in limbo.
Right, and if we put Tracy Brooks with Kaz, that would definitely make him a heel. So
absolutely.
So the shoe fits. Let's wear TNA.
Yep. Backstage, we get Eric Bischoff and Gunner. Bischoff said Gunner's going to destroy his son. He said that as a father, he feels responsible for putting him in that situation. He acted like he was going to get choked up. This is the same old Eric Bischoff stuff that he's been doing forever. And he would be one of the first five people I would fire if I had my druthers. Anyway, offered Garrett and Hogan a chance to throw in the towel. Gunner held up the towel helpfully and said Hogan would need it. And then we go to a video package. And then we go to Proving Me Wrong. Gunner beating Garrett Bischoff. Very surprised. Very surprised. I would have bet my house. You know? I really would have.
Yeah,
if I was a gambling man, turned on.
Beats him clean.
Yeah?
Well, as clean as can be. I don't know. The ending was Hogan climbing up on the apron, even though Gunner was down in the ring. And, like, going to Garrett, hey, should I throw in the towel? Garrett waves him away, turns around, eats a DDT. The crowd into zero in this match, except when Hogan punches Bischoff. I think this would have actually been better if Mrs. Bischoff would have been ringside, so they could have done the Bret Hart, Bob Backlund finish, maybe. Eric yelling at him to throw in the towel. Maybe then Hogan punches him out and she throws it in anyway or something. I don't know. And Garrett Bischoff in wrestling gear looks like Jimmy Wang Yang.
Yep. Really needs to work on his punches. Really needs to work on everything. But not a total embarrassment. And the problem with what you said is no one involved in this storyline is anywhere near as talented as Owen Hart was in doing what he did to Helen. So wouldn't have worked anyway. But yeah, I'm proud of them for having Garrett lose, because the worst thing in the world you can do is have him just kill everybody, you know? Just awful. So thank God. Yeah, the announcers put Bischoff over, whatever. The less I say about that, the more likely I will be to live to see tomorrow.
Yeah, Dusty, it's you can really show heart. Like, I wish we could put you in with Mike Tyson in his prime. You could get beat, but then the announcers could talk about how great an effort you showed as you got killed the whole match.
Yeah.
They actually do the Tanay and Borash at the desk for like a whole like 2 minutes, I think, gushing over it. And yeah,
yep.
No Taz tonight. Apparently, death in the family, so nothing you can do about that. But Borash fills in. Not as many witty comments, but actually kind of talks about the wrestlers like he cares. And your girl SoCal Val got to do ring introductions until apparently Hemi got done with all the backstage interviews, and then she did the main event.
Backstage, Hemi interviews Sting, talking about being the special enforcer for the four-way dance. Wants to make sure they're all on their best behavior. Video sets up the main event. Tanay and Borash do the tale of the tape. Borash looks for all the world like a Cabbage Patch Kid. I know I'm not the first person to say it, but I'm the first person to say it on Stunt Granny, and it had to be said. Looks like a Cabbage Patch Kid and sounds like W.C. Fields. Interesting combination. As you said, Hemi handles the ring introductions for the main event. Why she couldn't do the ring introductions for all of the matches and Val do the interviews, I don't know. I don't understand some of the things this company does. But they do them. Bully Ray calls her a skank and introduces himself. Before the bell, Rude asks Ray to work together, just like the good old days. Ray glares at him and does not respond. Rude continues to plea with him. Ray finally nods, but then went to ringside. Yeah. So this match goes about 15 minutes. Rude wins the match to retain the title. Your thoughts on this?
Well, my neighbor kicked me out right before this... the ending of this match, for whatever reason.
Temperamental.
Yeah, I don't know. I spilled some chips on the couch and tipped over my Mountain Dew. So, just reading the recap here, it looks like they did the old, Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart finish, Rude spits in Sting's face. So Sting swings the belt at Rude. Rude ducks it. Sting hits good old Jeffro Hardy with the belt, and then Sting, even though he hits Hardy, knocks him out, counts the pin with Rude doing nothing, just, taking the pin on Hardy, and Sting counts it. So, yeah, right out of, said I think it was Shawn Michaels, special referee for Taker Brett?
Yep.
WrestleMania 14? Yeah.
Not sure of the show, but yes, you got it right.
Yeah, well, it had to be before, it had to be the Shawn Michaels Steve Austin WrestleMania, which
go.
I think was 14. Yeah,
yep.
It wasn't 13 because that was Austin Brett.
Right.
So, yeah, they did that whole thing. So I guess Vince Russo wrote this up beforehand, although that could be a Bruce Pritchard thing because they would have both been in the company at the time. So,
right.
So yeah, going back to the old toolbox, I guess, 15 years down the line, you can recycle it. Besides the fact that it makes not a whole lot of sense, especially when Sting didn't want to count the pin, where in the back then Michaels didn't like Brett anyway, so he did the kind of reluctant but didn't really care that he counted the pin. So,
right,
kind of makes no sense that way.
Right.
So Sting should have let Hardy recover or something, but oh well.
Right. Yeah, he could have used his authority there to refuse the count or, force him to restart it or something like that. It could have been something else done there. Another kind of cheap finish. on the pay-per-view.
Yeah, and the announcers were talking about Rude being the luckiest champion, going in, so I guess that played into that. So I think he's the self-proclaimed luckiest champion of all time instead of from the Shellfish generation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So where do you think they're going from here? Are we going to get Sting versus Hardy on TV since Sting coughed in the match? Are we getting Storm and Rude? And I guess Abyss is coming back for Bully Ray, I would think, for the next pay-per-view TV, whatever. So, said, yeah, are we getting Sting Hardy?
I think so.
And who's the baby?
I think, Hardy will want to get his aggression out on Sting. Sting will plead with him, I didn't want to do this. Hardy will be like, but you screwed me over. And, it's your fault I'm wearing pants with 15 pockets in them. And, they'll probably do that.
They can bring up last year where he was in, last time they were in the ring, Sting beat him in 10 seconds. The Jeff Hardy's only offensive move was throwing a T-shirt that night. So they can talk about that, how he's rehab ready to go. I guess that's we're going to get three matches out of this four-way main event, maybe. I guess Zima Ion, your boy's getting a shot at Aries, whether it's on TV or not.
Yeah.
So
once again, good long-term planning.
Yeah.
At least it's leading to other stuff, It's,
yeah, we're getting... Or who's what do you think we're getting, just a tag title rematch, or are they going to break up the auto insurance guys or what?
Well, my first thought was they're going to break up Team Direct, and I don't know who the hell they put Joey Maggs up against. They're probably going to have to come up with another tag team out of thin air somewhere.
Eric Young
unless
and ODB.
They do the Robbies. I don't know.
Yeah. So
Young.
Yeah.
Young and
like ODB. They got good stuff coming out of the pay per view. I guess matchups that make sense that aren't, they're all kind of new. I guess Storm Rude is kind of fresh. For the most part. I guess Robbie E still has the global title or TV title, whatever it is, so he's never on TV. Are we going to just get, is Flair going to come back and team with Gunner against Garrett and Hogan, or what could possibly be the next step there? That's the one that I don't understand where they can actually go with it, because it seems like it's actually run its course until Garrett, does he just get better? Does he learn the leg drop, or what are we getting, the big boot next?
Well, I'll tell you what, my thought was Flair, because Flair will put anybody over. So that's a way for Garrett to get a victory, because Flair long ago flushed away all his credibility. So I probably see Garrett pinning Flair coming up as a way to get back to Gunner in the future, ? That would be my guess. So...
Okay, and I guess last thing, where do you think they're going with the women's title? Gail Kim thwarted Tara. Do they stick with that feud? Do we have does Madison Rayne turn face? Looks like Mickie James is not in a good position, so unless they want to give her another run to lose. I guess they had Velvet win, so maybe they're going to set up Gail versus Velvet, which I think Gail won the title from Velvet. Or a month or so ago, so they could go there. I guess they could throw the Mexicans in. They're not doing anything with them, so I guess a lot of possibilities.
Yeah.
Maybe they just set up a contender in the next month to get a
My best guess is Velvet gets the next shot, and then they lead up to Gail versus Madison down the road, and Mickey will probably be one we'll see disappear for a few weeks. And it's not just as punishment, but because they're kind of writing her down the line, They kind of rotate who they use, and it seems like a time where Mickie James is going to be a person they don't use anyway. So, it wouldn't surprise me if they fired her, because Hogan's got a lot of pull with this company yet, so.
Yeah, and I guess I just thought that Tessmacher's been out for a a month now, so maybe they're going to rotate her back in. She'll be off the Hooters circuit for a little bit. So
she's going to unveil her new finisher, her new finishing move, the chicken wing.
Yeah, the double chicken wing. Ba-dum-bum. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I guess the last thing I heard, a little news, is apparently Mr. Kennedy's not on TV because him and Bruce Pritchard do not get along from their run up north. So apparently there's
super.
A lot of heat there, and that's, yeah, so maybe we'll see him back. He's kind of, him and RVD are kind of the guys missing that
in a perfect world. In a perfect world, Bruce would bring in Hardcore Holly and book Holly versus Kennedy for the next pay-per-view. And let's just see what happens, you know?
That could main event anywhere in Iowa.
That would, absolutely. Even Des Moines, which is one of the bigger areas.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Three-way with Perry Saturn.
Yeah. So overall, I like a lot of what TNA has done this past week. The Hogan stuff makes me want to flush my head down the toilet. The bad finishes to main events makes me want to swing from a barn door. But overall, good matches, not great. There isn't a match here where I can say that was a match of the year contender, but good matches and good storytelling. And, you know, enough intrigue to make me interested to see what happens down the pike. So, a cautious thumbs up for TNA this week.
Yep. Yeah, I just like, I guess, where they're going with it. Not so much always an execution, I guess, but the fact that things are mapped out and they make sense. So, I guess it's up to the wrestlers in the ring to bring it sometimes, or, hey, maybe if Vince Russo or whoever hands you a script, maybe you look at it, but don't read it. Go out and say what you need to say, and if you do a good job, you probably won't get yelled at. So, And I guess the only thing that can't help is stupid car commercials and pre-tapes.
Yeah.
But when you're out in the ring, I think you ought to be able to wing it, do yourself a few favors. And, yeah, they set up feuds in this from Thursday to tonight or on Sunday into the future. So we'll see where they go with them, but things are set up, so that's always a plus.
Yeah. Yep. Any other thoughts before we sign out here?
No, I think that's it. Neighbor kicked me out, so it's about time for bed, I guess. It's been a late one tonight.
Yeah, well, neighbor kicked you out, now I'm kicking you out. So, for Matt Fanatic, I am Dusty Giebing. This has been Stunt Granny TNA Audio, and we'll try to do better next time. Peace.
Chicken grease.
But does Granny really hate the wrestlers? Hardly.